Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
This is what I call freedom. Well, I want to say, I want to tell you, I want to say, when you can do what you want to do and go where you want to go and live where you want to live and love who you want to love and be what you want to be. Join what you want to join.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome. All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, broadcasting straight out of the city of Chicago. It is a great day. It is in the 90s, I believe, but it's kind of cloudy, rainy. Hey, it's still beautiful. And I look at trying to see something positive in this. And it's great. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. We were out this morning and it's great. I just hope, and as always, I'm hoping that it's even more satisfied where you are. The weather is great. You're having a good time. You're feeling positive. You've uplifted. You've did your exercise. You've gone to the doctor. You did all the things you needed to do to keep yourself healthy and in the game. All right. That's what the George Wilder Jr. Show is all about. Keeping you and myself in the game. You know, I'm no different from anybody else. Believe me, I have aches and pains and I have to carry my ass straight to the doctor just like anybody else. Okay, so keep yourself in the game. Keep living. You know what? I saw something a few days ago about an 85-year-old woman running in the annual marathon. And I've said this before, but this is a different, this is a, another different individual. And I knew I had to mention this lady on the show. I don't know her name. I didn't get too far into her name. And all I know is I saw a photograph of this woman, a video of this 85-year-old woman running a marathon, 85 years old. Great shape, feeling good. She was positive. I don't know if she won it or not, but by the mere of her existence as being a part of this thing, this marathon at 85, she had a number on her front, and she was actually in the race. She was 85. There was no, her legs weren't hurting. Her knees weren't paining. Her back was not aching. She was 85 years old. God bless her soul and everybody else like her. If there's one 85-year-old woman that could run a marathon, there's other 85-year-olds, 75, 85-year-olds who can also do the same thing. Well, obviously, every 85-year-old cannot run a marathon. Some of them can barely get up and walk. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, but for those of us who look at this lady and other people like her who are capable of running marathons out here, I will take my hat off and I applaud these people. It's a guy that lives in my neighborhood, right here in my neighborhood on the north side of the Chicago near the lake. And this guy, now I've been over here for several years, and every year, not every year, but every day, this guy goes out and jogs every morning, and he looks like he's about 80, 85 years old himself. And he's very, 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 he's skinny, obviously. But the thing is, he's 85, he's in his 80s, and he's running every day. This lady is in the marathon. I'm pretty sure this guy probably have ran the marathon. I guess what I'm saying, do not let age be a factor in you getting up and enjoying yourself. These people that I know and have heard about and have seen who are 80 and 85, maybe 90, and running and enjoying life, they're not, you know, oh, my legs hurt. Oh, my knee. Uh-oh, that go my back. You have to realize that you cannot let age bring you down. Because if you let age bring you down, it truly will. If you're thinking bad things are going to happen to your body, it will. If you're thinking you can't do something, then you can't. If you're thinking that this is ridiculous, then it is. You have to be positive. You have to give yourself, I mean, if you can't do it, you can't do it, but I'm pretty sure there's people out there who can do it. And if you're 55, you're 65 or something like that, in between that age, if you having pain in your knees and your legs and all of this kind of thing, and then it's something you're doing or not doing, more likely not doing. Sometimes if you never exercised before, if you never got out and walked or joined a gym, it's going to tell on you as you age. But I would suggest to people to start young. I mean, start young, jog, exercise, go to the gym if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, I mean, you can always get out in your neighborhood, run around your neighborhood, or walk. It's all free. Or walk. But to see these people at those ages, running marathons, jogging every day, 85, maybe 90, who knows? But I'm guessing 80 to 85 years old, and running marathons, little old ladies, little old guys out here running marathons and as healthy as a June bug. I mean, these people are healthy. There's nothing wrong with them. They're not constantly going to the doctor, taking prescription drugs or anything like that to get better, because I've said this before. I actually think a lot of the prescriptions that doctors write for you can also kill you faster and quicker than the disease will. Because, you know, some of these drugs, they have so many side effects. You know, it's ridiculous. Now, but they still, you know, advertise that you should be taking these drugs, which I would not take anything. I think the best cure for anybody, if your disease is not progressed as much to affect your ability to walk or run or exercise in any way, I think it's a waste of time. I think the best remedy for you, if your knees ache, the best remedy for you is to exercise. Exercise through the pain. It will pay off. I can't walk. I'm hurting. You got to do it. Exercise through the pain. But I understand if you can't do it, if you can't do something, then you cannot do it. If you're, I don't want to scare anybody, but if you're in a wheelchair, if you're immobile, that's quick death. You know, if you're in a wheelchair, because in a wheelchair, you're sitting all the time, and your body was not made to sit or to be wheeled around or pushed around or to, you know, in a wheelchair. And move. You got to get up and move and get that blood flowing. There's nothing wrong with, I'm not saying I'm against wheelchairs or decrying people who are in wheelchairs. I'm just saying when you're in a wheelchair, you don't get up much. You have to exercise your body. But then again, when I think about it, there's a lot of people in wheelchairs who do exercise, move their bodies. They may not be able to move their lower part, but they can move their upper parts. Their arms can go up and stretch out, stretch up, stretch out. That's it. But being in a wheelchair, in some cases, people say it's a death sentence because you can't exercise. You're just so immobile, you can't move. Even doctors will tell you that. Some of them will not tell you that because they're afraid that you may die sooner because you're going to start thinking that this is a death sentence. And, you know, so they'll try to keep that news away from you. But I'm not. I'm going to say this. These people who are running marathons in their 70s, in their 80s, maybe in their 90s, these are role models for me to keep going. You know, I've exercised all my life. I have been doing it all my life. Maybe that's why I'm still standing. Literally on 2 feet. You know, exercise pays off, especially as you grow older, because it will stop all the knee pain, the joint pain, the back pain, the joint pain, everything. Your mind would be, you can think clearer. You'll be more positive. And drink water. Drinking water will definitely wash out your inner body. You know, whatever's in your body, you can wash it out with water. Some people call it detox. But you know what? I heard not too long ago that even drinking a lot of water keeps sick. I was surprised to hear that. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I was surprised to hear that drinking a lot of water. A lot of people say, well, drink eight glasses of water a day. Excuse me. And eat 6 servings of fruit. Don't do that. Especially if you're diabetic. Don't eat 6 servings of fruit, because majority of fruit contains lots and lots and lots of sugar. And as a diabetic, sugar is one of the first things you want to stay away from. Because in some cases, it's eating all that fruit, 6 servings of fruit a day, that has given you diabetes. Okay, even though there's other benefits from eating fruit, but as a diabetic, you want to stay away from sugar. At least you want to curtail your sugar intake dramatically. I don't think you really have to stay away from sugar altogether, but, you know, lessen it as much as you can. Cakes, donuts, candy. No. Unless your sugar gets too low, then you got to bite off a candy bar or something like that. Anyway, I just can't get over these people running marathons at their ages. And there's so many people out here who are, I mean, you've got young people out here in their 20s and 30s that can barely walk, you know, that can barely stand up. And you see these older people out here, they're just doing it. I actually think older people don't get enough. They don't get their props, as some people would say. Older people are kind of pushed in the background, whereas the younger people are running everything, because they some of them call themselves the millenniums, you know. But I'd like to say one thing to those millenniums: if it wasn't for older people, you wouldn't be here. So don't disc us, you know, because we're the ones who put you here. We're the one who gave life to you. We're the ones who birthed you. So, but you know, you got a lot of people now. Oh, he's old. That person is old. I mean, you got some people out here who think getting old means one thing: you're gonna die. That's what they think getting old. A lot of people, I mean, it's doctors, you know, you go to a doctor's office. Oh, you still around? Because I've said this 1,000 times, the medical industry in America is profitable. It's all about keeping you sick so they can keep filling their wallets. That's all it's about. And I don't know what's going to happen. A single payer with this crowd in Congress is not going to happen. And I want to say one thing about those people out there who's running those marathons, and people who can run a marathon at a very late age in their lives. More power to you. I look up to you. I really look up to you. And I'm a fan, really. And people say, well, George, can you get out there and run a marathon? That's probably. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a couple of feet. Probably. Yeah. But I'm in awe of all those folks, those older people. I mean, when I was young, I mean, like, let's see, 11, 12, 13, 14, somewhere around in that category. I looked up to older people. I mean, I didn't really like, if you read my book, it's in one of my books. I looked up to older people. I didn't want to hang around with people my age. If I was 15, I wanted to hang around with somebody who was 20. If I was 20, I wanted to hang around with somebody who was 40. If I was 11 years old, I wanted to hang around with somebody who was 15, taking it back. I always wanted to hang out and be around people older than I was, because I felt that they lived a lot longer than I have. And there were so many stories that they could tell. There was so much they could offer me. There was so much that I could learn from them, because they were here before I was. And I was eager to learn. I was basically fatherless. I was basically motherless. And I looked up to people who were older than I was, because I wanted to learn things. I wanted to get somewhere. I wanted to do something with my life. And I relied on older people for that. You know, they didn't know that I was learning, but I was. I didn't tell them, hey, I want you to tell me something I don't know. I would just hang around. We would just talk. And sometimes they would share what they know with me. And because when I was a kid, I was always curious. I wanted to know stuff. I wanted to know this. I wanted to know that. I used to go to my grandmother. May her Mary rest in peace. You know, I used to go to my grandmother and try to get her to tell me about slavery. And because I didn't know, I would hearing things here and there, you know, sometimes maybe in school or something. But I really wanted to know about slavery. So I would go to my grandmother, and sometimes I would sit down by her side and she'd just tell me things about. She didn't talk about it too much. She didn't dwell on it too much. She didn't get into it too much. But she did tell me that she, as a little girl, that she used to be in the fields picking cotton. And that's about, I think that's about all I got out of her, But I was very curious. I like hanging around my grandmother because I knew she had great stories to tell. And I knew her mother and her grandmother were probably slaves. And I wanted to know these things. Just curiosity. I was always the type who wanted to know things that happened before I was born. I was curious about what was going on before I was born. I was even curious of why I was born. I was curious of why I was Black. There was nobody to tell me. So I had to hunt these things down. I had to research and say, oh, why is my skin dark and their skin is white? I got to find these things out. I was just curious when I was young. I was just, when I was a kid, child, I was curious. And the thing about it, nobody in my family knew that. You know, I think they thought I was crazy, actually. But I wasn't. I wasn't. But I wasn't about to say those things. I was just curious at a lot of things growing up. So this is probably why I respect older people today. And because I've always looked up to older people as a child. I'm not relatives, no mother, no father, just ordinary people. I always get this thing for older people, you know, seniors and stuff, because they've been through a lot. And I think older people should be respected. I think older people should be revered, not looked upon as someone who should probably get their life together or get their will together or something like that. I think some young people should stop looking at older Americans as having one foot in the graveyard. I mean, that's totally unfair. You know, I've always looked up to older people. I've always wanted to be around older people because I thought older people, I still think older people are smarter than I am. They've been here a lot longer. And another thing, older people, you ever lost your thought? You ever lost what you were about to say? I think older people are some of the luckiest people in the world because they to be 70, 80, and 90, and that's a success in itself. Being able to live for that long is successful. If you live to be 75, 85, you know, 90, 105, you've done something right in your life, and people should look up to you and respect you for that because you've been successful. You didn't die at 15 or 16 like some of these kids out here who are shooting each other. You didn't die in an accident. You didn't have a heart attack. You didn't have a stroke. You are still here. You didn't die of a heart attack, or you didn't die of a stroke, or anything like that. You could have had it, did not take your life. To be a very, very, very old person, you've done something successful in your life. You've done something right. And people should look up to that. People should revere that. Wow, he's 95 years old. Wow, he must have done a lot of things right. He must have seen a lot of things. He must know a lot of stuff. That's one of the reasons why I used to hang around old people, older people, because I felt they had a lot to tell me. I wanted to know so much when I was a child. I really did. I just wanted to devour anything that I knew, anything. It was like a piece of cake or something. Wow, this is good. This is great. You know, the stories that I wanted to know and the stories that I have been told. So after that, I took everything that I wanted to know. I started reading books. I don't know how I got turned on to books. I really don't know. I'm thinking that maybe I just happened to one day mistakenly probably walk into a library. And I think that's how I knew about books and learned about books. This was way before I even started school. This could have been around four or five years old, and very, very young child. Yeah. And I think that's how it happened. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure that's how it happened, because my mother and father did not provide me with books. And I fell in love with the libraries when I first visited a library. I think I walked in on my own. And I've written about this. So if you want to check it out, check out my books, Echoes of My Sins. I've written about it. It's a memoir somewhat. And it was just amazing when I first walked into a library. I can hear some people out there, George, you're being boring. You're boring. Well, let me be boring, because I really do. If I can get back to older people, I really do admire older people. So if you're out there listening, the George Wilder Jr. Show loves you. Believe me. Loves you. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. You've been listening to me rant. Hopefully not boring. Not boring. All right. Felice Cohan and her book and commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest is Felice Cohan. And she will be talking about her book. Remember, folks, hate has no place here. Be kind to one another. And I always say that. Be kind to one another. Why be mean and nasty? You know, it's stressful. It will stress you out. Be kind to one another. Treat each other with love. All right. If we leave our health to its own devices, we will soon end up on medical devices. So basically what that means, folks, is go doctor. Go to your doctor. Make sure you're okay. All right. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. I believe I think I'm building another website. I'm always building websites for some reason. Okay. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter. I'm all over the place. I'm not on Snapchat, though. I don't know what's that. I don't know what that's about. So maybe somebody can explain it to me. I don't know. But anyway, Google, you can always Google me and that kind of thing. All right. Once again, my guest is Felice Cohan. And she will be talking about her book later on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Yeah, you ever notice when you're watching TV or you're watching the news or something, or you ever notice how many women are now taking over the media circus now? I mean, if you watch the news, you see women anchoring the nightly news. You see women doing the weather. You see women on some of these Hollywood shows, anchoring a lot of these Hollywood shows. I think it's great. But you got women all over the place. You know what I think it is? I think it was Wonder Woman, the movie. Women are saying, oh, it's women power, it's woman power, or whatever. And women are all over the place. I think it's great. I mean, a few of the jobs I had in the past, I was working for women. And I think that women were some of the nicest people I've worked for. Okay. And a lot of those jobs I was even hired by a woman, you know. And then I have a woman for a supervisor, a woman manager, you know, and a lot of them were, they were okay with me. I've had jobs where I've had a male supervisor, a male manager, and we had problems. But every time I worked for a woman, everything went okay. You know, everything was fine. You know, I mean, I remember I working for one woman and maybe a couple that I will not say on the George Wilder Jr. show, but I'm going to say this. I think working for a woman, from my experience, I can't say from anybody else's experience, but I have heard that other women actually do not like to work for other women. Other women do not want a woman boss. They have problems. But I never had a problem. I've heard that rumors about women not wanting to work for other women. There's sort of a competition there. That's what I heard, and I could be wrong. You know, I'm a male. What can I tell you? But I guess the bottom line is that I had a problem when I had to work for women or work with women. I think it was just one of those phenomenal experiences. And now I'm seeing women all controlling everything. There's women who are CEOs of corporations. I mean, women are just taking over. I'm saying, and I'm also saying, where are the men? What are the men doing? Oh, they're in jail. What? Yes. The men are in jail or locked up or hanging out on the corners, the street corners or something, while the women are running everything. Now, some of that's true, some of it's not, but there's no doubt about it. Women power is here. And it is. And I think it's going to be around for a while. And I think it's a good thing. I mean, I have nothing against women at all. You know, I think it's a great thing. I had a guest on my show and guests in the past. And I've always told them when they come on my show and talk about domestic violence that I'm one of their biggest advocates, you know, because I've written about it in a fictional sense. I'm still working piece on domestic violence in a fictional sense. I'm putting a story to it, and something dramatic as always. And we'll see where that goes, because, you know, it's like I said before, it's woman power. Some people say women power, and then some people say woman power.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. I get it.
A lot of sons have been.
Yeah,
arrested.
I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
All righty. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Like I've said, sun is coming out in the city of Chicago. I'm in my studio, folks, and I have this great big old window in front of me, and it is gorgeous. And it is totally gorgeous. Hey, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hi.
You're on. All right, Felice.
Are we on?
We are on, Felice Cohan on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Hey,
so
cool.
Glad to you be right.
No problem. I'm glad you're here. No, you're on. Cool. No, you're actually
all right,
on.
Let's do it.
There's people actually listening. Okay. All right. Give my audience a little bit of your bio.
Sure. So I'm an author. I'm a professional organizer. And I used to live in a 90-square-foot New York City studio, and a video of it went viral on the internet. And since then, I've been going around and talking about living in a small space, about how it made my life larger. And as a professional organizer, I give tips on how to, you know, store stuff, but also how to get rid of stuff and how to motivate to get rid of stuff so you can spend more time doing what you love to do.
Yeah, I was an organizer a long time ago. I was an organizer before I knew I was an organizer. I used to always try it. I used to work for this company where I used to always, and there was always deliveries coming in, and it was a small space, and I was always the one who tried to make space. And I was successful with it. I found ways to put things here, put things there, and put things there, and made space so people can walk through.
Right,
so is
right.
That the kind of app? Is that the kind of organizing you're talking about?
Yes, I am definitely talking about that. I look at it mm-hmm. like a puzzle, you know, whether, you know, in New York, in New England, I've worked in small spaces and large studios. And it's, mm-hmm. it's all about finding space for our stuff. And so much of the time, the problem is more that we have too much stuff rather than not enough space. And it's hard because we're consumers. We love to buy stuff.
But you know what? There's a lot of people out there who probably, if I can say it, who probably would need somebody with your kind of services, because a lot of us are just hoarders, junk everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's not even our fault. You know, you might get busy. Yeah. You have kids. You work. You have to run around. You have to do this, and stuff just keeps coming in. And yeah. I work with a lot of different people, and a lot of people just need that push. That motivation, and then they can kind of get into it. Once they see the light, once they start to see space appearing, they feel better. Because stuff creates anxiety, you know?
Yeah. What do you do if you run up on some people who just don't give a damn about space and organizing? They just want to be junky and sloppy and everything's everywhere, because they say that it's easier for them to find stuff if stuff is just all over the place.
Yeah, well, those people aren't usually calling me, but I do have, you know, like
of
my
course.
Wife or my husband is like this. What do I do? And I had a woman who's called us to help her sister out. Her sister was a hoarder. She lived in Manhattan in a small apartment. There was stuff everywhere. You couldn't even open the front door. Piles and piles and piles.
Yeah.
And she also had 100 lab rats. And
wow.
They were in glass tanks, but my goal was, I really said, look, this is a fire hazard. And we just talked her through it. And, and we made a huge dent.
Wow.
That's a disease. At some point it becomes a disease. Yeah.
Yeah. It can. And you know, at some point you got to try and say, clean that mess up, please organize it. So Felicia Cohen on the George Wilder Jr. Show, can you talk about your book?
Sure. So, I originally moved into the tiny space to write my first book, which was called What Papa Told Me, a memoir about my grandfather. He was in the Holocaust. I wrote it as a gift to him. And then when the video went viral, the book started selling around the world. So,
wow.
I said, oh,
okay. Congratulations.
Yeah, now I'm an author. Yeah, thank you. It was, you know, it was so great for him. And he just died last year at 94, but it validated for him. But it was funny because the first night I slept in that tiny apartment, the loft bed had 23 inches of space between the top of the mattress and the ceiling. And I woke with a panic attack, justifiably so. And then when I finally calmed down and I had a friend staying over and she's like, why did you choose to live here? And as soon as I said to write my grandfather's book, I calmed down and I realized, you know, I remembered what he told me he went through. And I thought, this is paradise compared to being in 8 different concentration camps and all of that. And I thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
And so I thought I would only stay there 1 year, but it was so great. I stayed 5 years. So the book, 90 Lessons for Living Large in 90 Square Feet or More, is about how living small made my life larger. And it's also lessons on how to downsize. But when living with less gave me so much more time and freedom to do what I wanted. My stress went down. My happiness went up. My savings went up. And now I go around and I talk at tiny house festivals and other places about that experience, that unintentional housing experience. And, you know,
that's wonderful.
The American dream.
Yeah, I was going to say that's wonderful that you're taking your own experience and trying to help others who are or have been in that situation that you've experienced.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I was saying that.
No. I was saying that that's nice that you've taken your experience to try to help others. I think that's pretty cool. You know, you're taking your experience to try to help others out there who are hoarders.
and even not hoarders.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I would think you're doing big business because there's a lot of people out here who are probably looking for more space in a little tiny space or something. You know, I would think you're doing pretty
well. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about it, as individuals, we don't take up that much space, but it's our stuff that takes up so much space. And like, you know, we say the American dream is to buy a big house and fill it with stuff. But, you know, many people know how quickly that dream can turn into a nightmare when, you know, all of a sudden you're back a mortgage payment and the kids need to go to the dentist and the car needs something. And we're working just to pay for a huge place filled with stuff we don't even use. And it's just not worth it. And you think you own all the stuff, but in the end, the stuff kind of owns you.
Yeah. I mean, I can speak personally. I have thrown away so much stuff that I've been here where I am for about 15 years. And over the years, you accumulate things. And over the years, you want to keep stuff, even though it's not useful anymore. And you just want to keep it around. And then all of a sudden, you see that you're running out of room and you have to throw something away.
Yeah. Yeah. You always, it's kind of an ongoing thing because we are constantly bringing stuff in. You just always have to check and you have to check yourself. Yeah, for sure.
You're bringing stuff in and you don't want to throw anything away.
No, I know. Everyone's like, well, I need it just in case, or, you know, there's sentimental reasons attached. And you got to remember at the end of the day, it's still just something. It's just a piece of thing.
Yeah.
The memory is inside you.
All right, Felice, where can we find your book? Where can we find some more information about this? Because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there saying, hey, wow, I need to make more space. Where can we find some more information on what you do?
Sure. You can go to my website, felicecohen.com. You can also go to Amazon and Kindle, wherever books are sold, and it's got all the links and all that stuff.
Are you planning on writing another book, or?
I am. I'm working on a memoir, and also another book on how to organize your workspace for success.
All right. When you get that memoir written, If you get that, sometimes I can't talk. When you get that memoir written, make sure you contact me.
I will. Thanks, George.
Oh, it happens sometimes. Do you have one more question? Do you have an excerpt you would like to share from your book?
Sure. I would love to. It's lesson 88, and it's called The Right Stuff. From the get-go, we accumulate stuff. First comes baby stuff like rattles and bottles. Next, there is childhood stuff like Lincoln Logs, Barbie dolls, and school artwork too special to toss. Then along comes college stuff. Textbooks, sweatshirts, and shot glasses. Those 4 years of further accumulation fly by faster than you can say yard sale. And before you know it, you're schlepping that stuff home, adding it to your younger you stuff, and promising your parents you'll take it with you when you move out. But adulthood is all about acquiring more stuff, which is why you never go back for your younger you stuff. You don't have room. And before long, your stuff gets entangled with your partner's stuff. Over the years, incrementally, if kids and pets come into the picture, family stuff appears. Then one day your kids will move out, leaving their stuff, and that art studio you always wanted will become possible. So first you must purge the years of collected stuff. Eventually you pare down to just the right stuff, the stuff you really love, and life is great. at least for a while. You see, with age comes senior stuff, and that, my friends, is a whole other story. Your art studio might need to make room for old age stuff like a walker and a stand-up chair. And it's in that stand-up chair you might spend your time looking around at whatever stuff is left and think, if only I had spent more time collecting memories than stuff. Don't let the wrong stuff get in the way of the right stuff. Get rid of it before it's too late.
Yeah, that sounds great. Give my audience, give them your website and where we can find this book, and tell us the name of the book again.
Sure. The book is 90 Lessons for Living Large in 90 Square mm-hmm. Feet or More. You can get it mm-hmm. on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and my website is felicecohen.com, F-E-L-I-C-E-C-O-H-E-N.
All right, Felice Cohen on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for being on the show. I think what you're doing is great and marvelous. Keep it up.
I will. You too. Thanks, George. All the best.
Bye-bye. All right, Felice Cohen on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Her book is Clean That Mess Up and Make Some Room. All right. Okay. On the George Wilder Jr. Show, we're going to talk about Trump's son. We've got to talk about this, folks. It's just something that's I've been wanting to do, wanting to say, and this is just phenomenal at what's taking place. We're going to do this right now, and I'll be right back.
Senator from California.
Senator Carper, it's interesting. You talked about Tanzania. It reminds me of a greeting that I've often heard from people who live in various African countries. You've probably heard it.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
Mr. President.
Senator from California.
Senator Carper, it's interesting. You talked about Tanzania. It reminds me of a greeting that I've often heard from people who live in various African countries. You've probably heard it. But when you meet someone for the first time, instead of what we would normally say, pleased to meet you, the greeting back is, I see you. I see you. And I think that really is part of our concern here. Do we see the people who will be impacted in the way that they are actually living their lives? And do we understand, if we see them, that this bill will not be in their best interests? And right now, for example, we know 13 senators, all Republicans, are crafting a bill, and this bill would restructure our nation's entire health care system, which, when you add up what Americans can spend on hospitals, doctors, prescription drugs, and all the rest, we understand that it makes up 1/6 of our economy. It would affect the lives of everyone. Our parents, grandparents, those who are in need of caregiving, our children struggling with asthma or opioid abuse, our spouses who may be battling cancer. And what is equally distressing is that this bill is being written in secret. The chairman of the Finance Committee says he has not seen the bill. The Secretary of Health and Human Services says he has not seen the bill. The American people, the people we all represent, have certainly not seen the bill. Well, I think the American people deserve better. This bill is being written entirely along partisan lines without any attempt to bring Democrats on board. And the American people deserve better. This bill is being written and rushed through the Senate with hardly any time to debate the cost or the details of this proposal. And the American people deserve better. Now, I remember when our colleagues across the aisle said the Affordable Care Act was being rammed down the American people's throats in the middle of the night. Well, the ACA went, in fact, through 106 public hearings. It incorporated more than 170 Republican amendments. The whole process took an entire year. But this health care plan involves no hearings, no bill text, and no transparency at all. As United States senators, we were sent here to represent the American people. Represent the American people. We answer to the American people. So why are my colleagues from across the aisle trying to put one over on the American people? I've met folks all across California and this country, and they see what's happening. They know that if this bill were as wonderful as its proponents would like us to believe, it would be out in the open. The American people deserve greater transparency. But even though the authors of this proposal have tried to conceal the details of their plan, we know enough to know this bill would be nothing short of a disaster. We know, because we've been told, that it's about 80% the same as the bill that was passed by the House. A bill so catastrophic that even the President of the United States, who hailed its passage, now calls it, quote, mean. We know that it would throw 23 million Americans off their health insurance within a decade, including putting 4 to 5 million Californians at risk of losing coverage. We know it would raise costs for middle-class families and seniors. In every county of California, average monthly premium costs would go up, while financial support to pay premiums would fall. We know it would put Americans with pre-existing conditions at risk and leave people who need maternity care or opioid treatment without coverage, or force them to pay huge out-of-pocket costs. We know it would cut about $834 billion from Medicaid, which means less money for families to pay for nursing homes, to support children with special needs, or to treat substance abuse. Bless you.
Thank you.
And that is another reason we need the Affordable Care Act to be in place, in a way that we fix what's wrong, but we mend what's broken and not repeal it altogether. I recently visited, Mr. President, a really remarkable treatment clinic in Los Angeles. It's called the Martin Luther King Jr. Outpatient Center. Everyone from the doctors to the patients can tell you that when 46,000 Californians, 4,600 Californians are dying every year from substance abuse and opioid overdoses, it is wrong and irrational to cut Medicaid. So it really makes you wonder, why would anyone support this bill? How does this bill help real people with real challenges? At a healthcare rally in Los Angeles back in January, I met a woman named Tanya. Before the ACA, she'd sign up for insurance just long enough to see a doctor. She'd then have a few tests done and fill a prescription. Then she would realize she couldn't pay and couldn't afford to pay for the insurance beyond that. And she said it's, quote, the worst feeling in the world to have to tell your doctor, who is trying to make you well, that you cannot afford the treatment prescribed. Tanya told me, quote, before the Affordable Care Act, living without health coverage was a nightmare in this country. But she went on to say that has all changed. And thanks to the ACA, I can now see a doctor when I need to, monitor my condition, and stay healthy so I can keep working and contribute to our nation's economy. If my colleagues in Congress, and she referred to them as if the Republicans in Congress repeal the law, I don't know what I will do. So I ask, how does the Republican health care plan help Tanya? Another woman, Krista, told me, quote, I am married with four children, none of whom, and one of whom is a 10-year-old type 1 diabetic. He requires daily active insulin management to stay alive, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. She went on to say health care is not optional for us. Even with health insurance, diabetes management is the type of thing that can bankrupt you. Without health insurance, I can't imagine what I would do. She went on to say the ACA is a huge relief for my family. So I ask, how does this bill help Krista and her family? Then there's Rhett in Marin County. More than 7 years ago, he was diagnosed with leukemia. Rhett is 9 years old. He says, cancer cells are the bad guys. This is what he wrote me. For 3.5 years, I took chemo to get the bad guys out. I had more than 1,000 doses of chemotherapy. My parents had to tell my sister that I might die of cancer. And then he went on to write, thanks to my doctors and nurses, my family and friends, my church and my community and the Affordable Care Act, now I'm, and then he writes, gone with the cancer. I have a pre-existing condition. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, my parents don't have to worry about losing coverage. A 9-year-old Rhett is showing us the way. But how does this bill help Rhett? Now, I don't know the party affiliation of any of these folks. I don't know if they're Democrats. I don't know if they're Republicans. I don't know if they're independents. I don't know if they're members of the Green Party. I'm not asking them those questions. I'm asking them, how are you doing? What's helping you? What do you need? And how will this impact you? And I know that I'm just one of two senators that they have. And when it comes to their needs and their need to be represented in the United States Congress and their need to be heard and their need to be seen, party affiliation should not matter. What should matter are the needs of the American people. And regardless then of who they vote for in a partisan election, I am certain of this. This health care plan that is being proposed by my colleagues from across the aisle will not solve their problems. And it will only create, in fact, more problems and potentially devastate people's lives. So to my colleagues, I say, this shouldn't be a matter of supporting this bill automatically if you're a Republican or objecting just because you're a Democrat. This is about what's right and what's wrong. If you know this bill is bad, stand up and stop it. Speak that truth. Now is not the time to keep quiet and hope nobody notices. Forget the politics. Forget partisan pressure and talk radio and primary ads. Instead, just listen to the voices of the American people. Not just in California, but in Nevada, in Arizona, in Ohio, in Alaska, in Maine, in Pennsylvania, in West Virginia. Because they have made themselves overwhelmingly clear. Only 20% of Americans support this bill. A majority opposes it in every state in this country. It is the least popular piece of legislation in modern history. I'm asking you to think about the American people. I'm asking you to think about Tanya. Think about Krista. Think about Rhett, living with leukemia since he was just 2.5 years old, undergoing 2.5-hour infusions every night with such incredible bravery. Let the determination of Americans like Rhett bring us together, a 9-year-old boy who tells us in his words, don't repeal the Affordable Care Act, improve it. Because we all agree the ACA can be improved. It must be improved. It isn't perfect. And I am ready to work with anyone who really wants to make it better. Instead of playing politics with public health and people's lives, we can actually work together to strengthen our healthcare system. In fact, I'm proud to have recently co-sponsored a bill with Senator Dianne Feinstein and a number of my Democratic colleagues. Our bill would make it safer and easier for middle-class Americans to buy insurance if they currently don't qualify for any help paying their premiums. These are the kind of solutions Democrats can get behind. These are the kinds of solutions that would help and not hurt the people we represent.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guest, Felice Cohan, and her book. I hope you got all that information, folks. I think it's a great, and that seems like it could be something for anybody to get into, to be a professional organizer, and just finding room where there is no room, cleaning out storage, making space where there is no space. Pick up her book and learn more about it. I know I am. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Bombshell, folks. Don Jr. colluded with the Russians. The guy is committed. Okay, the guy committed treason. Okay, I can barely say it. I don't know what's wrong with my mouth today, folks. It's just not working right. So bear with me. Releasing emails, Don Jr., Donald Trump's son, President Donald Trump's son, released emails proving that he colluded with Russia to change the outcome of this past presidential election. Folks, this is not a witch hunt. This has nothing to do with the media. It has nothing to do with reporters, the New York Times. This is not a witch hunt. This is coming from Donald Trump's own son. Donald Trump cannot lie and say somebody's trying to smear him or that people are lying on him or this is fake news. It's not fake news. He has nowhere else to go with this but to his own son, Don Jr. Met with a Russian lawyer hoping to get... something salacious on Hillary Clinton, her emails or something. But I always go back to that famous video that I saw that a lot of people saw Donald Trump in last year where he stood on a podium at a rally and looked directly into the camera and said, Russia, Russia, basically saying, I want 33,000 emails of Hillary Clinton. Russia, if you're listening, that was a cue. He was telling Russia to hack Hillary's emails and dig up some mess on her, and they did. They did. And then his liars are going around saying that it was a joke. Everybody who has a brain know that he stood there and told Russia to hack her account. That was no joke. So this is treason. This is treason. This is what's going to bring down, from what I'm hearing, Donald Trump as president of the United States, his own son. So he cannot blame the media for this. He can't, like he loves to do. He cannot call this fake news, as he loves to do. This is his family. Jared Kushner, he was there. Paul Manafort, they were all there. The emails prove it, and them and reporters researching this found out that this is true. This is true. And a lot of us are saying, when are the Republicans in Congress going to get some spine and do something about this president? How much can they stomach from this president? Every time you look around, something's coming out. It's not dripping out. It's running out of this White House. All kinds of collusion, corruption, lying, crime. They can't govern like this. I said yesterday on the show yesterday, Donald Trump doesn't want to govern. He wants to rule. But he's going to be out of a job where he's not going to be doing anything at all. Because if the Republicans get up off their asses in Congress and throw this guy out of office before he really, really actually does something detrimental to the United States, it's going to be all their fault. Donald Trump has gave these people in Congress, the Republicans in Congress, so much to impeach him for that these guys just aren't doing it. What they're trying to do is get their agenda through Congress, and then, you know, maybe then, but by then Donald Trump is going to have destroyed something very vital in the United States. Every time he goes overseas to meet with these world leaders, he embarrasses us. He doesn't allow reporters in. He doesn't rely note takers in, because he's hiding something. He doesn't want you to report something going on in there that he might say that is stupid. So Donald Trump he should be thrown out of office. This guy is just not it. And I don't care what his supporters out there are saying. We got some report. His supporters are saying. And a lot of them are still supporting him, even after they found, even after this revelation, this real revelation, they're still supporting him. These people who are still supporting Donald Trump are nuts. All of this salacious material that's been coming out of the White House since January of 2017 is still running out. And it's bad, it's treasonous, it's everything you can think of. The guy incites violence on reporters. He makes fun of the disabled. He lies like a dog. He stalked Hillary in their last debate. And there are so many other things. He said he likes grabbing women by their private parts. I mean, what is it? And I'm pretty sure there's a lot more that I haven't even mentioned yet. I can't think of a lot of them, because it's so much. Breaking his way through the front of the line. I'll never forget that, like a little bully child. He's a kid in the White House. He's a five-year-old in the White House with all of these, with his hands on the button. What is it going to take for these people, these Republicans in Congress, to do the right thing and get this guy out of office? I've said this several times, and I said it yesterday. I'm saying it today again. If they don't do something about Donald Trump, and this might be the stick that broke the camel's back, this might be the enchilada that will remove him. If they don't do something, he's going to really, really tear this country up. because it keeps coming. It keeps coming. The garbage keeps coming out of this White House. I've said this before. The White House is full of gangsters and thugs, and it's the Goodfellas. Donald Trump is the Godfather. As Marlon Brando played in the 1972 movie, that's Donald Trump in the White House, yelling and screaming and threatening people all in the White House. The White House has been made a mockery by this administration. The Oval Office are just, I mean, if you saw Kellyanne Conway, the way she was sitting on a couch in the Oval Office, acting like it was her home, that the White House belonged to the American people. Not to Kellyanne Conway, to see her disrespect the Oval Office the way she has done is ridiculous. And she's still out there lying for Trump. She's lying for Donald Jr. Sometimes it's just ridiculous how this lady just lies and the commentators let her lie and get away with it. Now she's trying to defend Donald Trump Jr. when Donald Trump Jr. has provided all the evidence in the world that he has colluded with Russia. So has his father. So has people in his father's circle. That's treason. And I'm hearing that this will be the end of Donald Trump, because the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller, he's taking this latest revelation and he's going to go with it. Donald Trump Jr. has already hired a lawyer. Some people say, well, the guy has lawyered up. I mean, when you hire a lawyer, when you get yourself lawyered up, there's something there. There is something there. So this is a bombshell. The guy colluded with Russia, Donald Trump Jr. And Donald Trump himself, like, as I've stated, he has no recourse in this. This is his son, and I'm hearing that he's supporting his son. I mean, of course, his son. And then some people saying he's throwing his son under the bus. The seven most important things about Trump-Russia emails Donald Trump just released. Donald Trump Jr. just released. This looks a lot like collusion. Okay, and it does. It really does. President Donald Trump's son-in-law and campaign chairman met secretly in June 2016 with a woman they've been told was a Russian government attorney who could provide documents that, as part of Russia and its government support for Mr. Trump, would incriminate Hillary Clinton, according to the emails released by Donald Trump on Twitter Tuesday morning. This is really bad. This is totally awful. I think that the election should, I think that with all the salacious material and corruptness of this government, I think this president, Donald Trump's presidential election, should be null and void. I think that it should be null and void because it's showing proof that Donald Trump had Russia help him in getting elected. And there is no doubt about it, folks. Hillary Clinton was truly, she was elected. Hillary Clinton was elected. Donald Trump and his minions and Russia cheated to get in office. Right now, the Republicans in Congress should throw this guy out and replace him with the person who actually won the presidential election last year. Hillary Clinton. Should be no bones about it. It should be nothing else to say about that. All right, emails which were also obtained by the New York Times and which were released by Trump Jr. shortly before the Times published its scoop. The reason why Jr. came out with these emails was because the New York Times was about to publish these emails, so he came out publicly with them himself. Okay, maybe that was wrong, because if they could have lied, they were out of it. Obviously, if the New York Times would have came out with this scoop first. first before Donald Trump Jr. did, then Trump would have had a way out of it by saying it's fake news, it's not true. And Donald Trump could have said the same thing. Donald Trump Jr. could have said the same thing. But now Donald Trump Jr. himself is admitting to colluding with Russia, admitted it. The emails proves it. He said it. So Trump has no recourse of saying it's fake news. The media is out to get me. It's CNN. He has no recourse. He cannot jump on them. The media reports what they know, and they report what is factual. All of this fake news crap is just something that Donald Trump can latch on to whenever the media is reporting something about him that he doesn't like, even though it's true, even though it's factual. If he doesn't like it, it's fake news. I guess when the media reported that he liked to grope women by their private parts, he probably is fake news. How can that be fake? It's not fake news. It's fake news because he says it's fake news, but in actuality, it's what he said. It's what came out of his own mouth. Anytime Donald Trump doesn't like the reporting on something that he said and done, and there's proof, he's going to call the media, the outlet that reported that story, fake. Because he doesn't like it, even though it's true, even though it's factual. So it's fake news. Fake news. He's latched onto something that he's never going to let go, and that's fake news. Donald Trump cannot stand them and like the media. The media doesn't like him. Believe me, they don't like him. But they have a job to do, and their job is to report what's factual. Donald Trump doesn't give a damn about the freedom of the press. He wants to shut the press down. He wants to sue them. He wants to run them out of town. This is Donald Trump. He wants to be a dictator. He wants to be a ruler. You know, he wants everything that he says to stand, but it's not going to happen. This is a democracy. He can't stand that. He's trying to upend Martin Luther King's legacy. That's not going to happen. People can't, that's not going to happen. He's trying to upend President Obama's legacy. That's not going to happen because he's going to be thrown out of office. And a lot of people can't wait until that happens. But obviously, Congress, the Republicans in Congress, they're not doing their job. They're letting somebody who is unfit, criminal, a criminal, treasonous criminal, liar, abuser, sexual abuser, sexual assaulter, by his own words, someone who embarrasses the country abroad every time he goes over there. I mean, there is so much on Donald Trump, it's a damn shame. And Republicans are just sitting on their asses letting this happen. This should not be happening. And then you have Mike Pence, who straight up lied about Russia interference. Straight up lied on camera on television. If you don't know who Mike Pence is, he's the vice president of the United States. He's also in that circle with Donald Trump and the rest of his goons colluding with Russia. Donald Trump and Pence should be thrown the hell out of office at the same time. Liars, liars with their pants on fire. It's awful. And like I've said, I think Hillary Clinton should be president of the United States right now. Right now, if Congress did its job, but Congress is not doing its job. This is why we have to get out here and vote their asses out in November 2018 seems like a century away. And we need something to happen now. But Congress will not act. They want Trump in the White House so they can get their agenda through. They want to get their agenda through, but nothing is going to go through. I don't care. Even health care that they're supposedly working on, that's not going to go through. It's too, Trump carries too much damaging baggage. He cannot govern. He cannot even lead. Right now, he's in the White House yelling and screaming at everybody in there because more and more his, you know, his profile is being damaged. And whenever his profile and his presidency is being damaged, he starts screaming at people around him. They had nothing to do with it. Donald Trump is a liability to himself. Donald Trump is the worst enemy to Donald Trump. But he looks around when he's in the White House, the Oval Office, looks around, who's there, and jumps on them, screams and yells and goes crazy on everybody around him in the White House where it is not their fault. It's Donald Trump's fault. And this time it's his son. It's his son. Wow, this just gets crazy every day. I just can't wait for the movie. It's gotta be a three-part movie, two-hour, three-part movie. You know, and I'm pretty sure Donald Trump is not gonna like that. I'm pretty sure Hollywood is probably working on a movie now. They can't get it right. I mean, they can't get it right because there's too much stuff coming out of the White House. Every day there's stuff coming out of the White House. So there's gotta be a new script every day, gotta be written. But it's not funny. It's not humorous. This should not be sarcastically joked about. This is serious. This is America. This is our country being upended and ruined by Donald Trump and his family. The other day when Donald Trump was at the G20 summit, he had his daughter sit in for him. What kind of crap is that? Then I think the other day he had his son sit in for him at these meetings. What is that? Your daughter is not the president of the United States. Your son is not the president of the United States. You're supposed to be there. And I'm hearing that a lot of the countries worldwide are dissing America. They're dissing us. And they're dissing us because of Donald Trump. And I just don't know what to say when the Republicans in Congress are letting this happen. A lot of people say, well, if you impeach Trump, then we get that lousy ass Pence. True, we will get Mike Pence. We will get him. But let's hope that if they impeach Trump, and they have to, the American people are going to make sure of that. If they impeach Donald Trump, Mike Pence has to go along with him. But then again, if Donald Trump is impeached and Mike Pence is impeached for lying, then the next in line for the presidency is Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. And we know what an asshole he is. He can't stand the elderly. He can't stand the disabled. He wants everybody to die. So the best way is to impeach them both and sit the true winner in the Oval Office. And that's Hillary Clinton. She's the true winner, the true winner of all of this. She got 3 million more votes of the popular vote than Trump did. Trump colluded somehow and somehow, you know, won the electoral vote. 300 and I think it's 302 electoral votes is what he received. Obviously, I've heard several reasons to why he got that many, that he had operatives, you know, going around in that particular state, badgering people to some effect. But the fact is that Russia interfered and his son seeked to have Russia interference, and there's proof of it. His presidency should be null and void. It should be over, and Hillary Clinton should be placed in that in the White House immediately, because we don't want Michael Pence. We do not want Paul Ryan. But there is no doubt about it. Trump has to go. That there is no doubt about it. And I'm not saying this because I hate Trump. I don't hate anybody. The George Waddle Jr. Show is not about hate. But if you love America and you hate the direction that it's going, and you got somebody in the White House who has criminal ways, and Trump and the minions, his ass kissers, they do have corruption and criminal ways. And it has to stop, folks. It really does has to stop. We need a new direction. And it's all up to the Republicans. The Republicans in Congress. They're sitting on their asses. They don't like this drip running out of information, information running out of the White House, these scandals running out of the White House every 24 hours. They don't like it. They don't like the fact that Trump is who he is and what he is and the lies. The Republicans don't like it, but they refuse to do anything. I mean, they will run all over the place in front of the cameras and the microphones and say, this is not right, this is not who we are, but yet they will not do anything about it. How much will they have to stomach? How much will America have to take with this guy? It's just not right. It's just not right. We have to do something now. Save our country. To save our country.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone who never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us song.
right, everybody. I want to thank you for listening to the Please join me tomorrow and the rest of the week. With a... Yes. Bye-bye, everybody. Take care. Have a great week.